Hello and welcome to our program, 10 Lessons Learned, where we talk to business people, journalists, authors, professors, ambassadors, leaders and luminaries from all over the world. My name is Siebe van der Zee and I'm your host. I'm originally from the Netherlands, happily residing in the Grand Canyon state of Arizona in the United States. I'm also known as the Dutchman in the desert. Our guest today is Jan Cavell from the city of Hastings in England. Jan is a successful businesswoman, entrepreneur, author, public speaker from the United Kingdom with extensive experience running micro and small businesses. She started her own company from scratch as a single mother with two young children. As you can imagine, she had to overcome multiple obstacles to go on and to create a highly successful business. Jan has always been very passionate to encourage and support other entrepreneurs. She was chosen as one of the first 50 women to represent the United Kingdom in the European Union on entrepreneurship. More recently, Jan also became an author. Her first book was published by Bloomsbury in 2021, and her second book, Start for Success, came out in January of 2023. Her books are aimed at helping to aspire and grow entrepreneurs and scale up companies. Jan once said, "I passionately believe that a healthy economy relies on nurturing and encouraging our startups and scale-ups. Now more than ever, we need both." You can learn more about Jan Cavell on our website, 10lessonslearned.com. Hello, Jan. Thank you for joining us.
Siebe, thank you. That was a wonderful introduction.
Well, happy to facilitate that. But I'm curious, tell us a little bit more about your decades-long desire to help startup and scale-ups. Where is that coming from?
Well, I got involved, I have to say, originally by chance, and that was the European campaign that you mentioned. And, it was one of those, I knew somebody who knew somebody, and it put me forward for a campaign very kindly. And it was fascinating, completely different to all the other ones I got involved in. But of course, we were working with groups of women from all the other European countries. And so we went to the European Parliament and all sorts of things. But we got a chance to compare what was going on in other countries, which I think made it very unique. And at home, of course, we were tasked with getting businesses up and running and making people more aware of entrepreneurship, because it wasn't fully birthed by the TV by then. it was just a word that a lot of people didn't know what it meant or how it related to them. And so that in itself was hugely rewarding. And other campaigns spun out from there. And, when you sort of speak to somebody and you get to know them, and a small business births from that contact, it's pretty amazing. And you can see that's a mushroom, it is what the economy is all about.
Now, teaching entrepreneurs is not necessarily easy because they typically have an independent mindset. Is there a magic? Is there anything that you apply? Because again, they're independent and they don't want to work for someone else.
You're so right. I'm thinking of myself. I mean, anybody who tried to teach me must have been a brave person until I at least matured slightly. But I think you're right. I think it's very difficult. I think entrepreneurs tend to, in general, respect other entrepreneurs more than people outside that world. There's a certain cliqueness and a feeling that you understand, whereas nobody else in the world does.
Yeah, so your own credibility helps you in teaching others to go through process.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Before we get into the 10 lessons, Jan, I have to ask you a question. Is there a lesson that you have learned in your life, in your career, that you would like to teach yourself if you would be, let's say, 30 years old today?
I think, really, what has bugged me all through my career on and off is taking on people's negative voices. And I still fight it today, but I'm aware of it at least, which I wasn't then. I would internalize everything that was said about me, around me, or what I thought was said. Half the time you make it up, I think. But so yeah, I'd probably tell my 30-year-old self to stop it and be much more aware, learn that lesson a lot sooner.
I like that. And I think that's a good lesson for anyone at any age, right? Be yourself, yeah. Be yourself.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a look at your 10 lessons. And I had, of course, already a chance to go through them. They're fascinating. Lesson number one, being laughed at or the fear of it should never stop you.
Absolutely. I mean, I think failure, particularly the fear of being ridiculed, laughed at in any way, is what stops a lot of people, even when it comes to starting businesses. But, you know, this, that came from originally for me. I mean, I had trouble through childhood because, of course, kids love sporty kids. And if you're not sporty for any reason, you tend to be a bit of an outsider anyway. And I was ill almost constantly as a child and I couldn't find what was wrong with me, so it dragged on. And my parents, in their dubious wisdom, dealt with that by sending me to not one but two very sporty boarding schools, which couldn't have been much worse, actually, for it's a choice for a child. The first one specialised in riding horses. The report went quickly back to my parents. I remember it well, simply saying, Jan has yet to learn the difference between stop and go. So that was clearly a success. And then I went to another one where I felt equally excluded, and all the girls were very sporty and out on a cross field. And marginally speaking, swimming was my best sport. But I mean, that still meant I was in the bottom five of the class or whatever. But the day came and some swimming match, all the other good kids were away at home, off sick, whatever. So I actually got hauled in to compete in a competition against another school. And it was backstroke, which was never my forte anyway. So, you know, but I thought, I'll give it a go and maybe I can do this and maybe I can be like all the others. So off I set. And I will never know whether I heard the truth or whether I heard invented voices, if you like. But some halfway through the race, I was convinced that what I could hear was everybody laughing. And I thought, oh, you know, this is just typical. Everybody else must have finished. Because of course, on your back, you can't see, you know, at all. And you have no idea what everybody else is doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I just rolled over and swam to the edge. And I thought, you know, I'm not gonna do this. You know, I've clearly made an idiot of myself and I can't stay in here all afternoon. And of course I looked around and yeah, I mean, I was somewhere in the middle, possibly a bit nearer the back, but I could have been perfectly respectable. But that was the negative somewhere. I mean, some poor kid might have laughed, but nothing to do with me. But well, I was convinced it was me.
It sounds horrible, right? For especially young people to be laughed at. And it is something that we understand is happening all over the world, and it can happen easily for different reasons. But to develop that inner strength to be able to overcome that, because again, it's, you know, we are, let's say, grown-ups, we're mature, we have gone through these things, but for young people that can be a major challenge. And then to be able to develop that inner strength, I think it's extremely important.
Well, I mean, it took me a long while to, I never competed in fairness, I don't think I was asked to compete again in a team game at school because I really wasn't good enough. But I did decide to take on the sports and tucked away. I mean, by that time, it was probably a couple of years later, tucked away on holiday away from anybody I knew. I took up water skiing, which again, I was still really bad at. And it took me, I remember my parents were despairing because they, of course, had to pay for the lessons. And it took me 10 lessons to even stand up and another 10 till I made it round a circuit without falling over. But yeah, you're right. Somehow something stubborn came out and I thought, I am going to do this somehow, even if I'm never very good, but I will do it. And I loved it. I loved it for years and years.
I think it also links well to lesson number two. It's okay not to be the best because actually that is impossible.
Yeah, and I think, you know, lots of us are brought up to be very high achievers and we're told to do really well. And do, you know, we confuse that saying do your best with to be the best, I think. And, you know, I certainly did. And, you know, I desperately wanted to be the best, to do well, for everybody to applaud me, like me. I'm not quite sure which, or my parents, or generally all those things that gets us going and wants us to be special and win. And, you know, I think one of the troubles that set in was with art, because for one thing, I was really good at school, was, well, according to the teachers, was art. And by this time, I'm talking maybe sort of 14 years old, 13, 14. And my parents were summoned and I was told I should be, you know, apply early to go to one of the London art schools. And, you know, this was something really special. And I won county prizes. And, oh, yeah, I'm going to be the best. This is great. And so they put me into the sort of 15, 16-year-old exams, O-levels that they were in those days over here. And I failed. I failed out totally. And I was stunned and I was angry. I was angry with the people who took the exams. I was angry with the teachers. Then another teacher came in, a different one, and told me I was no good as well. And so I just wouldn't go to the lessons anymore. And I still, to this day, I've never got back to it, which is silly, actually. I might enjoy it now, but I just haven't had time, I think. But I was just didn't want to know. I was so angry and so hurt by it. You know, unlike wall skiing, I'd not take up an equivalent at all, because there was no point in doing it unless I was going to be a star, which is awful, really awful. What a waste. But why couldn't they have left me alone to just enjoy the art, which I did, you know, silly.
Well, what a great lesson learned, truly,
yeah.
Right? Because if I look at lesson number three, orders are good, right? It sounds like in business, you're focused on making money.
Yeah, I mean, I had the proverbial entrepreneur problem of not liking working for other people. So my forays into employment were always extremely brief, which nearly always means when you're like that, you end up doing sales jobs for a very short time.
Yeah.
So I got used to doing high percentage telephone sales work. And I suppose I got a fair bit of experience of it. But when I came to start a business when my children were young, and my choices were very limited as to what I could do, because I didn't want to leave the children. So I wanted to work from home. So that meant phone work, selling something on the phone. Okay, I'd had some experience on that. And that all came, you know, from that sort of grittiness and B-mindedness, sales experience, all good. You know, it enabled me to get a business off the ground by keeping going. But it came as a massive shock much, much later on, because I grew the business from absolutely nothing, from a kitchen table. Well, I say the kitchen table, it was actually a shelf, literally, under the stairs. Not very glamorous office, but I grew that to two factories. So we're talking a fairly substantial amount of sales, which sounds fantastic and sounds mega successful. But of course, in business, the lesson I eventually learned, though I couldn't always stop myself going for it, was you can't just go on selling, you know, because if you can't supply the goods, the customers don't want you very much. And yeah, you can do what I was constantly doing, which is replacing the unhappy customers with new ones. But it's a very expensive way to go about it. The people who work for you are always very unhappy and overstretched. And so, yeah, you know, I learned very much the hard way as we grew, without systems, without all sorts of things that I should have been focusing on as an owner. But sales, we had, you know, massive quantities. But it's a mistake. But I'm not the only salesperson who I've spoken to, you know, because I've talked to a lot of entrepreneurs for my writing. And interestingly, I have met one or two who come from a sales background and have fallen into this same trap. We are so focused on the deal.
Sure. And I think it's a very valuable point indeed, because you need sales to do business, but if you don't take care of what you need to do in order to do the business right, then sales may plummet, basically, because you cannot deliver.
Absolutely. So, absolutely. And the impact on your team is horrendous, you know, because you're constantly failing, constantly overworked. But, you know, I find it really hard not to do it. Well, mostly I did keep doing it. Let's be honest. It was a fairly constant mistake.
Well, there is that desire to sell, and I think that's inside you. And so that makes sense as well. But lesson number four, values are far more important than they seem. I think that's somewhat connected to lesson number three, right? It's not just sales.
It's certainly connected to learning in business. Because there I was growing this thing from a kitchen table up, and I was ignorant as anything. See, but honestly, I was so green at a business, there's just no way of describing how ignorant I was. So the values I had to probably look up in a book, you know, what are people talking about values? Oh, right, okay, we should have some of those. So when we were still quite small, I sort of got together with my team, said, you know, what do you think about values? What do I think about this? You know, I said, I think, you know, we ought to have a lot of fun here because we're here most of the time. And, you know, we spend huge amounts of our lives at work. And so I think that's really important and that should really feature. And I think we had some others, which, you know, about reliability or, you know, some slightly more serious stuff. But fun was really high priority. And we had about five. And they underpinned the business really well. And we had fun. We had loads of fun, and it was lovely. And we grew successfully, and the culture was great. And later on, of course, as we grew, you start getting lots of experts come in and say, you know, oh, well, you know, I can help, and I can tell you how to grow your business. And what they should have said is stop selling. But anyway, you know, I can advise you to do all this better. And one of the things I constantly got advised about was values. Because, of course, a lot of people who write values for other companies, you know, see it as a PR exercise, what the company ought to look like. And so the word fun hit the wall. And that was disaster, because as soon as that happened, we stopped having fun. Yeah, and the culture changed. So, yeah, my lesson is don't ever let anybody else set those values for you. They've got to come from your heart, you know, yours and your main people, and be something you can live by. It's no use going around saying, you know, oh, we're excellent because the clients want it. You know, if it doesn't get you up and enjoying life and trying to do well, it's pointless.
Yeah, it makes sense. And if I think of your lesson number five, values are more important than turnover, and learning how to sell a business is vital. It's sort of the next step, right? It's one thing to have values and appreciate that. But ultimately, and I'll let you, of course, explain that, selling your business, learning how to sell your business is critically important as well.
It is. I mean, again, this comes down to my extreme ignorance when I started. And while the amount of information I accumulated from not least making every mistake in the book as I went along was huge. One of the things I never tackled was the idea of selling a business.
Yeah.
You know, it was way above my head. You know, I thought serious big business people, you know, who run huge consortiums and things, buy and sell businesses, not sort of small businesses. And it never occurred to me I would want to. Absolutely not. Firstly, my kids got involved with the business, so particularly my son. So I was thinking this is something that will go on forever, and I loved it anyway. So I'd sit there and say, you know, you have to drag me out of here, or one day you'll come in and find me sitting in that chair over there, and, you know, that'll be it. I never thought of selling it, till of course I did, you know, because life changes. And my son, by absolutely mutual agreement, left the business. Make his own way. And that was a big turning point.
I was going to say, that must have been a big turning point.
It was, yeah. I mean, in theory, it was supposed to be a slightly more gradual one. And so that was the end of that idea. And that, you know, was big because it changed the face of the business. it changed direction for me. You know, all of a sudden I was doing empty nest syndrome and all of that. And what being a family business no longer was. And my whole reason for doing it, and I'm trying to think of the word, motivation is what I'm after. My whole motivation for doing it, which was all about the family, all about the kids and our future, all gone, you know. So it was difficult to feel any interest. And so for a while, I started to go on courses and learn more. And it suddenly occurred to me that I could build it up and sell it. But it was very late in the day, not the right time to think about it. I should have done it from the start.
I think it's very powerful what you're saying, because obviously this was a personal, a family situation. Perhaps if you look back, you could say not unexpected, right? That children decide to go a different direction than the parents hope for or expect. But it also taught you that lesson as far as looking at your own business and say, well, it's one thing to enjoy having my business, but I really need to focus on the opportunity, perhaps. And in your case, that was the reality to make the company ready for sale.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, for all I kept on telling myself that I should make it ready for sale for sort of my old age, and, you know, because it was a good thing to do to realize the maximum value and all those sensible things. It's terribly hard to get excited about being sensible. Being passionate about something is a whole different ballgame.
No, I like it. I understand what you're saying very much. And it's something that I think all entrepreneurs, of course, have to be aware of and learn those lessons, and hopefully not, you know, because that's painful when it comes down to your own family, decisions that were made by your child, your son, etc. So important lesson. We're talking today here with Jan Cavell, an experienced serial entrepreneur and a successful author and speaker from the United Kingdom, with a focus on helping to aspire and grow other entrepreneurs, sharing her 10 lessons learned. I want to thank our affiliate partner, Audible. Audible is an amazing way to experience our program, 10 Lessons Learned, but also books and other podcasts, allowing you to build a library of knowledge all in one place. You can start your free 30-day trial by going to audibletrial.com/10lessonslearned. Again, that's audibletrial.com/10lessonslearned, all lowercase, to get your free 30-day subscription. We move on. Lesson number 6. Systems may be boring, but they are a game changer. I have some thoughts and some questions, but please go ahead.
Well, I think that's a lot to do with the fact that that combination of expectation of always being there, my kids being involved, and us growing far too fast because of sales, you know, sort of all those fatal flaws, if you like, didn't make me think, oh, systems matter, because we were all too involved. It was almost a very early startup mentality, and then scratching your head and wondering why it didn't work for 50 people. You know, and of course it doesn't. You know, it's something that transition from tiny startup where everybody knows everything, everybody gets involved, and you can all buckle down and work till 10 at night or whatever's necessary. It just all has gone by the time you get to 50, for the sake of argument, it's gone before then. So, you know, you've got to somehow introduce a different approach that is more controlled. You know, this is, you're quite right, you'll have lots to say about this, and I will shut up and let you do so. But yeah, to build value to your business, and therefore, to get back to the last point, to be able to sell it well, you need systems to make it run without you. Otherwise, it won't run without you, without the system, simple as that. And therefore, you're devaluing your business massively, and you're also making it an everyday nightmare.
Now, I'm kind of curious because, for example, a CRM system, I can see, of course, the value in a company for that. Are you also suggesting that you should have the latest and greatest system, or is it more you need a system?
A system, absolutely not the latest and greatest. Indeed, you know, I think systems, you know, it's got worse since we've got so techie. There is so much on offer. And you have to remember, I mean, one of my problems was having come from a sales background, I was obsessed by recording in card index box type and when I started. But, you know, all those vital details about what you said last time to the customer, you know, what their child's name is, what their when their birthday is, you know, do they play golf, or, you know, all that stuff that builds a relationship. And, you know, when you've got a lot of clients, you can't remember, let's face it, you have to actually look it up before you speak to them. And that's where a CRM system is like gold dust. However, if your people in sales don't use it, it doesn't matter if it's got wings on as a system. You know, you want something simple and friendly that they will keep updated.
I would fully agree with that. You know, here in the United States and perhaps in England the same, sometimes we use the term playbook. There has to be a format, and indeed you need systems. But, and that's why I asked the question, there is such a variety of systems and formats, but as long as there seems to be a structure in place, like you said, you know, pertinent data that you can, that you have access to and that can be helpful in your communication with clients, customers, and perhaps manufacturers as well. That is so important to have.
Absolutely. Yeah. And the other thing is it stops you being so exposed. You know, I had people from the start who knew, as I was saying, how to do everything, which is great. But of course, over a long period of time, and I had that business for nearly 20 years, you know, they're not all going to stay with you. And so if none of it's written down, gradually that early skill and information, and we were in cabinet making and woodwork manufacturing, and that's a dying trade anyway because of automation, so all that skill dies off, and suddenly, you know, you're looking at people who can barely make a joint on a table. And, you know, if it had been systemized from the start, it would have been absolutely simple.
Yeah, great point. Lesson number 7, investment isn't only for other people. What comes to mind?
Well, I think, you know, I've got fascinated by this early on in my writing career while I still had a business, but it gradually came to my attention. I think it was probably through the encouraging entrepreneurship campaigns I did, that particularly investment is terribly governed by male, female children and privileged money children, money background, and less privileged. But people who have money and have male children tend to teach their kids investment in a way that females don't. If girls are taught about money, it tends to be, even though it's still much more likely to be to do with housekeeping or balancing the books or whatever, you know, they're simply not taught mostly in the home to invest. And there have been a lot of campaigns over here, certainly, to get the schools to do it, but I don't think they are very much. And therefore, there's this massive imbalance. We all believe, certainly I did, you know, that investment is for privileged white males, you know, which is crazy because, you know, take $20 and whoever you are, start to know what you're doing, gently invest in and build up, and then gradually you've won with money.
It's such an important point. I have to think of my own situation when I was in my 20s, living in beautiful Amsterdam, and I was a potential buyer of a relatively small apartment on one of the beautiful canals in Amsterdam. Gorgeous. And I didn't buy it. I moved on and I moved to other countries. But if I think back today, the value of that small apartment on that beautiful canal, it must be so high, and it was affordable and I didn't invest in it. And I think it's truly a lesson for many of us that have gone through their careers, that if you have an opportunity, even at a relatively early age, to invest for the long term, the payoff will be there, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, it's as you were saying earlier, it is a longer term viewpoint. If it helps, I remember I was very lucky in that I did have from inheritance a sort of deposit system to get a place of my own very early. But I had a flat, believe it or not, in Notting Hill. Now, this was before the film, so it was before it was famous, and it was still a very run-down area. but I sold that because I was bored and wanted to move and wanted to move. And so I sold this flat in Notting Hill, just near all where the film was filmed and everything else, for under 20 grand.
Wow.
Yeah, it still irritates me.
But those are the lessons that we like to share with up and coming professionals at any age. We always add that because it doesn't matter how old you are, but those are important lessons. And I appreciate that you share those. Lesson number 8. Interesting. Don't quit is a load of baloney. Don't quit is a load of baloney.
I think it is, you know, it's one of those messages that we're constantly told. Don't quit. I mean, social media is stacked with don't quit, isn't it? And it's really dangerous. I mean, you know, all the look at the businesses that pivoted in the pandemic, you know, pivoting and doing something completely different is an essential part of being an entrepreneur. You have to recognize where there's a dead end. Otherwise, you're going to go out of business.
But that's a tough one, because when do you decide that you should either pivot or make adjustments, or that you say, I have to quit, I have to go do something completely different? How do you make that decision?
Well, it goes back a little bit to being in a swimming pool, doesn't it? You know, you're quite right. You can turn over too early and because of the perceived laughter, or you can go on and risk making a complete fool of yourself. It's got to be a judgment call, you know, and I think there is a very good argument for taking it as far as you can do, of course. But I think the obsessive message with don't quit now is really dangerous. I think, for example, you know, there's health. If your business is affecting your health mentally or physically, damn it, it's time to quit. Your health is much more important. You know, that's one example.
But is that because, whatever, you're seeing a doctor and the doctor advises you, you know, to take it easy or to do things differently? Or is it really something, it has to happen inside your own mind, in your own head, that you say, you decide, I don't want to do this anymore the way I'm doing it. I got to make a change.
I recognize exactly where you're coming from. And I guess my last few years of business were pretty like that because my ignorance of selling and being unsure of sensible, you know, build this up and make it my retirement fund or just do something else and be unsensible, you know, meant I did veer back and forth very much. And there was that feeling that I shouldn't stop doing it.
Yeah.
And people told me I shouldn't stop doing it. Why are you thinking of stopping doing it? You've got a successful business. Why would you want to do that? And, you know, health was certainly among the reasons. You know, it wasn't good for me in any way, shape, or form anymore. It had been, but it's past its sell-by date. You know, that can happen with everything.
It's a tough one, right? Because if someone has a certain job, a certain career, and they are also responsible for taking care of the family, it's even more difficult to decide,
absolutely,
I don't want to do this anymore, right?
And, yeah.
And so it's, I understand, and I like the entrepreneurial mindset that you say, hey, I make my own decisions. I don't need someone to tell me how to make my decisions. And at the same time, is it sometimes an easy way out? I've not been successful, therefore I quit. Or is it really, it could be a desire to focus on something completely different?
I think if it's just an easy way out, you're probably not meant to be an entrepreneur in the first place.
Good point. Good point. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, entrepreneur's life is not an easy one. You know, however successful or unsuccessful you are, it's not for the faint-hearted, is it?
No, absolutely. And actually, it's a good segue to lesson number 9, right? The word entrepreneur isn't synonymous with Superman or Superwoman.
Very true. And yet everybody thinks it is. You know, there's such a misconception about entrepreneurship in lots and lots of ways. I remember very early on, you know, having, despite the fact I thought we were all very close when we were very small, and, you know, people I thought knew me fairly well, and having quite a fiery argument with one of them, one of the people who I worked for, probably down the pump one day with a couple of beers, so probably not wise moment to have an argument anyway. But but yeah, and he was saying, well, you know, you've got your own business and you know you've got your own house, so you're obviously really wealthy. And I was saying, no, you know, I'm actually in debt up to here. And I know, you, nonsense, you know, you're one of the lucky ones, you're really rich. People assume that business equals success equals wild wealth tucked away under the floorboard somewhere, you know, so I think that's a misconception. But also there is this thing that, and it's probably partly from the entrepreneurs themselves in many cases, we think we have to be strong, Superman or whatever. There isn't any room to be weak and to show vulnerability, not to our clients, particularly in B2B, they're trusting you with their business, not with your staff, because they want to be sure that you're going to function. It's very hard. And again, briefly, I remember, albeit a slightly tiresome member of my team after we'd grown, and he was whinging, frankly, about having to change his own light bulb. But, you know, and not having enough light and nobody being around to call the electrician and causing a mammoth fuss. But that was beside the point. I said, I couldn't help it. I was in hospital. I was unconscious having an operation. That's not my problem, is it? He said. You know, and there is this extraordinary, we don't care about you. You cannot be in any way vulnerable, and in the broadest sense of having any weakness. And I also think that there's a lot of proven data, which is really fascinating, that entrepreneurs in early childhood have more often than not, far higher than the average, had some sort of trauma in the family. So they've conditioned themselves to get on and get through it, which of course makes them wonderful entrepreneurs. But sometimes it makes us prone to pushing too hard. So you go way past the place where you should have said, hold on, I need to take time. Actually, I'm falling to bits here.
I can imagine that this particular issue is extremely important and valuable when you talk to entrepreneurs who perhaps are relatively early in their career being an entrepreneur, the ups and downs and how you deal with that. Your experience over many years and in so many different situations, I can see you speak from experience. And I think as an entrepreneur, that's what you need to hear, not just from a book, with all due respect, but right, you need to hear from the person.
And the person, I think that's true. Yeah, you know, and I have had some corking experiences of, you know, and of course, being a single mother too, as I was running a business, you know, that leaves you very isolated. So, you know, again, there's this additional pressure that you have to be strong and Superman, Superwoman, Superperson. Well,
I mean, that's such an important point, and I do want to emphasize that, because I have to admit, in many ways, I've been very privileged in my life, in my career. And over the years, I have become very much aware, especially when it came to women in business, colleagues, from my first job many years ago, how impressive that was, and the obstacles that so many women still today have to deal with. And to succeed in that area as a female entrepreneur is truly, it sets an example for future generations.
I certainly think that's true. And I think women come under a tremendous pressure of being in the public eye in a way that men don't. And I think that's a huge pressure. Equally, though, I think men are more conditioned to be strong and be tough and be the superhero. So, you know, there's disadvantages on both sides, poor things.
Yeah, I'm sure we can come up with examples that are not exactly like that, but I like it. And again, I appreciate what you're doing. And lesson number 10, we're already at lesson number 10, but I think it's such a critically important lesson. Lesson number 10, never lose your thirst for learning. Wow, that fits with our podcast. Thank you for bringing up that lesson.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought of it, but of course it doesn't. It fits really well. I should have done that by design. I can't claim I did. What a shame. But yeah, going back to, I suppose that's a lesson that you can see trace through my entire career, because you've got this bolshy childhood, you know, couldn't learn sport, so didn't learn sport, couldn't do art, didn't learn art, and generally caused a lot of trouble. Luckily, I was academically fairly sound, so I didn't have to bother too much and sail through okay. But then chose to go my own way. Firstly, sort of messing around jobs, then starting small businesses, then starting a business as a single mom. You know, but all of it led to this extreme ignorance throughout my business, having to find out on the hoof and learn as I went, which is a hard way to do it. I think, as you say, I think there's a lot that can't be learned from books, actually. So I think that's really going to be necessary, however brilliant you are, to how much you've researched and how much you've gone to colleges and one thing and another. However, there is an extreme ignorance, and I think I got the cake on it. But later on, one of the things I think I briefly mentioned after my son left, one thing I thought was, actually, you know, I've got a bigger team. I can start going off and doing some more formalized learning about business. So I signed up for a club down in London that specialized in high growth businesses, business founders, various lessons, courses and what have you. And I did a 6-month course, intermittent course of work on your business and work on yourself and get genned up. It was a game changer for me. You know, I was in so many ways. I'd been so isolated, firstly, for the first time I was around people who I felt at home with, you know, because out in the sticks and with other mothers at the schoolyards and, you know, local businesses, I hadn't really come across any other entrepreneurs. So there were this group of bullshit, difficult, mixed up, determined people. And I was thinking, wow, you know, I've come home. So that was part of it. But also I got hooked on learning in a way I hadn't since my teens, because I was a massive reader in my teens. So on the side, I learned lots. And I just loved these courses, absolutely reveled in. Oh, now I understand. That's why I did that. That's why this didn't work, you know. And it set me on a course of examining my whole business and realizing what had worked, what hadn't. And later on, of course, it really set me on the course of writing, because I wanted to continue that journey of learning about entrepreneurship. And I needed something to facilitate that without running a business anymore.
Yeah. Well, let me throw a twist at it. The lessons that you have learned, is there a lesson that you have unlearned in your life, in your career?
Lesson I have unlearned in my career?
Maybe not.
I think that there are a lot. I mean, I think I was heavily pigeonholed by my upbringing and the schools I went to and the sort of girls I was brought up with who were from a particular background and very expected to get married and never to work and, you know, completely different to anything I expected. And I used to have a discomfort between the fact that I didn't fit in with the people I grew up with, I guess. And I think I've unlearned, I am perfectly comfortable with who I am and who I've become now. But it's taken me a long time. So I guess that.
Yeah, that's valuable. And I almost put a smile on my face because I can tell you're very confident. You have a good sense of humor, put things in perspective. But I understand that perhaps it wasn't always easy.
No, it hasn't always been easy. I can't argue with you there. But it has always taught me.
Wonderful. And I want to thank you again for joining us and sharing your wisdoms with our global audience. It was very interesting. I want to make some closing remarks. You have been listening to our international program, 10 Lessons Learned. This episode is produced by Robert Hossery. And as always, we are supported by the Professional Development Forum. Our guest today is Jen Cavell, an experienced serial entrepreneur and a successful author and speaker from the United Kingdom, with a focus on helping to aspire and grow other entrepreneurs, sharing her 10 lessons with our audience. And to our audience, don't forget to leave us a review or a comment. You can also email us at podcast@10lessonslearned.com. That is podcast@10lessonslearned.com. I hope you will subscribe so that you don't miss any future episodes. And remember, this is a podcast that makes the world wiser and wiser, lesson by lesson. Thank you and stay safe.